From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of July, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And then a bit later in the program, Gary Schnitke will be here. He has some ideas about hedging the crop insurance RP product. We'll hear more from him, and we'll hear from the state statisticians in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Nebraska, and Minnesota. They'll update crop conditions in their areas as we close out the program. Don Day is away today, but we'll talk with Dan O'Brien, our Ag Energy Specialist, on this Tuesday afternoon about some of the work he's done recently for K-State. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures for the soft red winter wheat finished 32 and three quarters lower at $8.80. The hard red in Kansas City in the September down 39 and three quarters at $8.74 and a half. September corn futures in Chicago, $7.89 and a half. The last trade there down 24 and a half cents. December at $7.77 and three quarters, down 7 and three quarters. In the March, $7.70 and three quarters, down 5 and three quarters. May corn for the day at $7.67 and a quarter on its close at 2 o'clock Central Time, down 4 and 3 quarters. July down 4 cents at $7.60 on the afternoon. August soybeans, $16.46 and a quarter, down 52. That's 52 and a quarter. September at $15.93, down 54 and 3 quarters. And November beans at $15.66 and a quarter, down 56 cents on the day. January contract at $15.46 and 3 quarters, 55 and a half lower. The March at $14.30 and a half, down 47 and a half. And May soybeans, $13.68 and a half, down 38 and a half for the day. Bean meal futures at $5.08.50, down 14.50, and the bean oil at $51.41, down 2.34. August feeder cattle on the day at $137.32 and a half, up $1.67 and a half. August live cattle at $118.85, were 25 cents higher, and the lean hogs on the afternoon finished at $93 and a nickel, down 27 and a half cents for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil at $88.50 a barrel, up 36 cents. Ethanol at $2.60 and 7 tenths of a cent. That's 4 and 4 tenths lower. Natural gas at $3.16 and 9 tenths, up 5 and 2 tenths. And the RBOB at $2.82 and 2 tenths. That's 6 cents lower for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.82 and 2 tenths of a cent, 3 tenths of a cent higher. And the gold futures on the afternoon, $1,576 even, down $1.10. The U.S. dollar at 84.01 is up 0.3. The CRB index on the day at 296.27 is down 2.61. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the afternoon in Urbana-Champaign. Partly sunny, hot, a high near 95 degrees. Heat index values all the way to 103 on a northeast wind at 8 miles an hour today. Tonight, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Those will come after 7 p.m. this evening. And then tomorrow, partly cloudy and a low, tonight's low is at 77. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny and a hot of 103 degrees, a heat index value of 106 tomorrow. Going to be really hot. And then Wednesday night, partly cloudy and 77 degrees. Thursday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny and 94. Thursday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and 70. Friday, sunny and 87. Friday night, clear and 67. Saturday, sunny skies and 85 degrees. Saturday night, mostly clear and 66. Sunday, sunny and 86. Sunday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a 68-degree low. And on Monday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms again, partly sunny, and a high of 87 degrees.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, is on the phone line to take a look at the commodity markets with me. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
It was really ugly overnight for the corn following through, but it finished up better than it started the day in the session.
You know, we had a bad overnight start, got better. Looked like we're going to recover about 6 or 7 o'clock this morning. Hung in there, sold off a little bit, and then the 9:30 Chicago time floor opening sort of drove it down, and then it got real ugly. Quite a roller coaster ride today until the noon weather forecast come out of the GFS and talking about a ridge building, Todd, a little bit coming back in there, and that started the corn moving up out of the hole and took us off the limit down bids, and actually coming back quite nicely in the corn market.
You were impressed with the strength, I suppose, then today, and will it change with the weather forecast again this evening?
You know, I think that there's maybe a little bit of reality that we can help the corn by filling out ears, filling kernels. You know, the pollination phase is basically over. So, you know, we have limited ears, limited kernels on ears in different areas and different things going on that way. And, a good rain can fill those kernels and make them twice as heavy or twice as deep as they are if we get some moisture now. But the real help that's possibly out there is for the bean crop like that. So we heard a lot of talk, floor traders today or the guys up there, even thinking that they could possibly be doing a little buying corn, selling bean on the spread because of that attitude.
All right. So how much trouble might the soybean crop, do you think, will be in the next 2 weeks when you look at the forecast and the weather men that you're talking to?
Well, I'll tell you, if we don't get some decent rains across central Illinois, central Indiana, there's many parts of Iowa and that I really could use a good soaking rain, a half to inch and a half type rain here to help these beans, set some pods and actually fill the pods. And, we've got a very big variance of what could happen to this bean crop depending on the rain over the next 2 weeks.
Outside market's been playing much of an influence?
Well, they wanted to tell us today that it was a lot of European influence, the Greece deal, the Spanish banks, their bonds going up, and just a sort of a sluggish feeling that the funds weren't throwing extra money back in to keep the rally going, and that allowed some of the locals to push this market on down today. So it influenced us in that the funds weren't throwing extra money in there today because of their problems in Europe.
What are producers asking you about the marketplace and what things they can and should protect at this point?
There's been an awful lot of talk. It's been thrown out by most every advisory service out there that when we get up here, or when we were up there, that there should have been some buying of puts to protect your insurance payments. It looks like that would have been a great idea to do Friday. But after the market's come back a little bit here, we are seeing quite a few of the people that still don't think that the market highs are probably in yet, because the worst is probably yet to be realized by the trade when they see how bad some of the crops are in some of the areas. We haven't traveled all around, but we've seen more ugly crops as of late than we'd have good crops. But, your crop tour found some areas that had some decent-looking corn.
Yeah, I was surprised by what the tour I took on Sunday looked like. That was about 300 miles long, and it was... I won't make any beans about whether it was good or bad. You can look at that on the website. There is one picture at willag.org, or you can get to my Twitter account at Commodity Week, just all one word, and you can see all that. And I'm in the process of putting together a little video that we'll try to post up on the website at WILL2 and send that out. So I won't make any judgment calls about whether it was good or bad. I saw some, a tremendous field, and I saw some zeros on my way. It's pretty variable across the place.
And that's the problem. Zeros don't average in really worth a darn.
No.
It takes a lot of good fields to make that zero come on up there along the way. And I think, when we talk about average yields, Todd, one of the things we have to remember is how many harvested acres are we talking about? Are we going to zero some fields out and not average them in? Or are we going to, what's our harvested acreage going to be amounted to? The main thing that's going to come about the end is this a 10, 11, 12, or 13 billion bushel crop, and we have to decide what that's going to be to know what we need to go to ration it.
It seems like it's a long way from now until harvest, although that's not very far away. What's the best guesses that you're hearing for the size of the corn crop?
You know, over in our area here, if you go north of town between Linden and Lafayette, north of Crawfordsville there and over towards Waynetown, they've got some very good corn. We can see a lot of 180 bushel corn up there. And we're going to be hard-pressed to get anywhere close to 100 bushels when you get south of Crawfordsville. And as you go down towards Terre Haute and that lighter soils, they're going to be lucky to see 30 and 40 bushels on a lot of their ground. So, you know, it's such a variance. It's so hard to tell. We just know that it's going to be a very disappointing harvest for many, many farmers.
Thank you so much, Wayne.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
Yesterday afternoon, USDA released the weekly crop progress reports. It showed a continuing decline in the condition of the corn crop, with 45% now in the poor or very poor categories. Last year at this time, that combined number was just 14%. 22% of the corn crop has entered the dough stage of development. 6% is dented. The rolling five-year average is 2%. 79% of the soybean crop is now blooming. 31% of the crop is set pods. Both of those numbers are well ahead of average. Just 34% of the bean crop is said to be in good to excellent condition. That's a drop of 3 percentage points. Now here are the state statisticians from the Midwest with updates from their regions.
This is John Cord from the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending July 22, 2012. Another hot, dry week without significant precipitation in most areas of the state caused Iowa crop conditions to decline. This now has been the hottest start for July and the summer season since 1936. With deteriorating crop conditions, there have been reports of some farmers starting to chop corn. At least 95% of the topsoil moisture is rated short to very short in all of Iowa's districts. The corn condition rating at 23% good to excellent declined 13 percentage points from last week, with 96% of the crop at or beyond the tasseling stage, and 89% of the crop silking. 36% of the corn crop has reached the milk stage, while 12% has reached the dough stage. Reports show corn has reached the dent stage in all districts except northwest and northeast Iowa. 85% of the soybean crop is at or beyond blooming stage, with 28% of the crop rated good to excellent, down 10 percentage points from last week. Pods are being set at 36% of the soybean crop. Third cutting of alfalfa hay harvest, 51% complete, is a month ahead of normal. Over three-quarters of Iowa's pasture and rangeland is rated in poor to very poor condition. Excessive heat continues to cause livestock losses. This is John Cord reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, the Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending Sunday, July 22nd. Statewide, there was little relief for drought-stricken Illinois as temperatures averaged 81.8 degrees, which was a blistering 5.1 degrees above normal. Rainfall accumulations were also once again reported below normal at only 28 one-hundredths of an inch, which after doing the math came up 68 one-hundredths of an inch, short of normal for the 7-day period ending Sunday, July 22nd. Growing degree day units since May 1 ended the week at 1,819, which was 197 units or 12% ahead of the historic average. Corn in the dough stage was reported at 38%, compared to 12% 1 year ago and 16% for the five-year average. 8% was reported in the dent stage, and this compares to 1% for the five-year average. Overall, the state's corn crop was rated at 36% very poor, 30% poor, 27% fair, and only 7% as good. Soybean blooming advanced to 84%, compared to 61% a year ago and 59% for the five-year average. 40% of the crop was setting pods, compared to 13% last year and 18% for the five-year average. Overall, the soybean crop was rated in 13% good or excellent condition, down 4 more percentage points from last week. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, the Nebraska Field Office, with a crop weather report for the week ending July 22, 2012. Ongoing drought conditions coupled with above normal temperatures continue to take a toll on dryland crops. With pastures and forage supplies short, corn acres have started being chopped for silage or cut for hay. Irrigators were struggling with water demands, and in some cases, more water has been used to date than a full season would require. 1/4 of the corn crop was in doe stage or beyond, with some concern over insect levels. Corn rate at 37% in good to excellent condition, well below 80 last year and 79 average. Over 1/4 of the soybean crop has begun setting pods. Soybean conditions rate at 28% in good to excellent condition, well below 78 last year and 77 average. Wheat harvest was virtually completed. CRP acres were being released for emergency forage use, bringing some relief to livestock producers. However, selling of livestock continues. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending July 22, 2012. Statewide, top soil moisture supplies held relatively steady and were rated 21% very short, 35% short, 40% adequate, and 4% surplus. Most crop condition ratings declined slightly. Corn and soybeans both remained in primarily fair to good condition. Temperatures averaged over 6 degrees above normal this week, and rainfall amounts varied across the state. Several northern areas remained dry, while some central parts of the state received above average precipitation. Corn development continued ahead of average, with 23% in the milk stage and 2% in the doe stage. Soybeans were 43% setting pods compared to 8% last year and 12% for the 5-year average. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Hello, this is Andy Higgins with the Indiana Field Office of USDA NAS, and this is a crop progress and condition report for the week ending Sunday, July 22nd. Desperately needed rain finally arrived in many areas during the week, with accumulations ranging from 0 to 3.42 inches. Soybeans, hay, crops, and pastures should benefit from the rains, but a high percentage of the corn acreage has already moved past the pollination stage of development, which will limit improvements that moisture can bring at this point. The Farm Service Agency designated an additional 14 counties in Indiana as natural disaster areas, bringing the total to 50. 90% of the corn acreage is silked compared to 62% for the 5-year average, and 20% of the corn is in the doe stage compared with 4% for the 5-year average. Corn condition deteriorated slightly and is now rated 7% good to excellent compared with 46% last year at this time. 78% of the soybean acreage is blooming and 32% of the soybean acreage is setting pods, which is well ahead of the average pace. Soybean condition showed some improvement and is now rated 12% good to excellent compared with 47% last year at this time. The rain brought some relief to livestock during the week, and very little death loss was reported. This is Andy Higgins reporting.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates. You can hear them each and every Tuesday on the Closing Market Report. In studio with us, Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist at Illinois, to take up RP insurance and hedging some of the gains that have been made in Chicago on the futures markets. Prices are awfully high for corn and soybeans, Gary. And you have some suggestions for producers who have taken crop insurance and what they might be able to do to protect some of those gains.
Yeah, most farmers in the state have taken RP, Revenue Protection Crop Insurance, which has a guarantee increase in it. So if our harvest price is above the projected price, it will use the higher harvest price in its guarantee. Well, what that allows is producers to hedge up to their production guarantee in that product and be assured that the hedging losses or gains that are associated with those hedges will be offset by a combination of crop insurance and crop sales.
Can you detail how that works?
Well, let's say right now we're looking at a December 2012 futures contract in the 790 range. If that, in fact, turns out to be the harvest price in October, or that's what the harvest price averages, we will get our crop insurance payments based on $7.90 and whatever the yield shortfall is. If we hedge right now for $7.90 and prices drop to $6.90, our crop insurance payments will be based on a price of $6.90, but we'll have a hedging gain of $1 in that case on what we've hedged. If it works the other way, if we go from $7.90 to $8.90, we'll have a dollar loss on hedging, but our crop insurance proceeds will go up because we're now using a higher harvest price in that guarantee. Well, if you look at typical short crop years, prices peak early and then decline. And there's a sizable chance or a pretty good chance that prices in that October period will be lower than they are currently. So one of the suggestions now is use the futures market to hedge all or a portion of that guarantee that we have from our RP insurance product.
So you would be hedging the revenue product or the crop insurance and bushels in it and not expected bushels in the field?
That's correct. So let's just take an example here. Let's say we have 175 bushel APH is what we'll be basing our yield on. And we took out an 80% RP policy. That would give us a guarantee of 140 bushels. If we get below 140 bushels, which on many farms seem likely this year, if we hedge up to the 140 bushels, we're going to get the equivalent of 100 bushels, 40 bushels on that farm. It's either going to come in terms of actual yield, and the difference between actual yield and our crop insurance payment. So we can hedge up to that guarantee, and we'll get the equivalent bushels either through production or that crop insurance guarantee.
And if you're a true hedger in this case, you have to remember to lift the hedge.
Yes, that would be a good idea to lift the hedge. If we sell our corn example, these corn contracts now, we would want to be lifting them in October. That's the point when the settlement price would be determined for our crop insurance. And if it would take like four contracts to make our hedge, we could lift one each week of October because the settlement price is an average of settlement prices during October.
Sounds like something pretty simple to do, but you have to have the margin money in case
it goes
the other way.
That's right. So if we hedge now for $7.90, and let's take my example, you go 140 bushels, we could go up to $8.90 between now and October. We'd have a bushel margin call each bushel, and you could have margin calls of $140 or more. So you would have to be prepared to make those margin calls, either by having a line of credit that could make those margin calls or the equity to do so.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. In a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll check in not with the weather today because Don Day is out, but with the agricultural energy markets. Dan O'Brien of K-State University will be here.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Tequila Day. Tequila was first produced in the 16th century near the city of Tequila by the Aztecs, long before the arrival of the Spanish in 1521. When the Spanish ran out of their own brandy, they began distilling tequila, North America's first indigenous distilled spirit. By the way, it is a common misconception that tequila is fermented from cactus. On this day in agricultural history in 1938, Nestle introduced Nescafé instant coffee in Switzerland. Originally, the product was developed to assist the Brazilian government in solving its coffee surplus problem. Instant coffee is made with a blend of beans mixed in a blending drum, roasted, ground, and then brewed in huge percolators. Then the coffee is sprayed into a heated stainless steel dryer to remove all the water. In 1997, Scottish scientists announced they had cloned a sheep with human genes. And in 2005, Richard Dahl died. Dahl, a British scientist, was one of the first to link cigarette smoking to lung cancer. Based on a 50-year study, Dahl found that almost half of persistent cigarette smokers were killed by their habit. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
On this Tuesday afternoon, Dan O'Brien of K-State University now joins us to take up the agricultural energy markets. Dan, thanks for being along. I understand that you just completed a study that you'd like to tell us about.
Yes, a group of us, Robert Wisner out of Iowa State, Ron Plain out of Missouri, David Anderson out of Texas A&M, and Don Hofstrand out of Iowa State, were involved in a study that was sponsored by the American Feed Industry Association, as well as CFAIR, the Council for Food and Ag Resource Economics, to try to lend, an objective analysis to the issue that so concerns the feed industry, as well as the ethanol industry, that of how the development of the U.S. Corn ethanol since from 2006 to the present in particular, how that's interplayed or interacted with feed usage with the livestock industries here in the United States. And the first thing to recognize is that there are important investments and important agricultural interests on all sides of these issues, It doesn't take long to where you're finding yourselves wrestling with, seeking to understand accurately and objectively what the U.S. government policies were, what their intent was as they developed a more, domestically reliable source of fuel for the U.S. economy, and they accomplished that through the development of the corn ethanol industry. But as that, if there's something to wrestle with, it's the issue of how, as we've used more feed grains for ethanol on the one hand and more soy oil products for biodiesel production on the other, what the secondary and beyond impacts have been on the various industries in the U.S. that are competing for those same feedstuffs. So we, in this report, we tried to wrestle with that and provide in some objective viewpoints. And I think that
bullet point summary. You got about a minute and a half.
Okay, sounds good. Point by point, I think that without question, as we've come into, especially these last couple of years, where we've had tighter production situations and really no excess of corn available at a low cost. For either the ethanol industry or the livestock feeding or the export industries, that we've seen the price of feed rise, and because of that, it's challenged the competitive profitability of the livestock industries. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because the livestock industries have responded with ever increasing efficiencies on their own. Really, the question down the road is, where do we go from here? And in the longer run, if we see a leveling out of ethanol usage for grain and increasing yields for corn in the U.S., we're probably going to see a softening of the tightness of the situation that we're in right now.
Dan, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Todd.
Dan O'Brien is with K-State University, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for Tuesday afternoon. You can hear him again, if you'd like. All of our programming, in fact, at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.